Welcome everybody to the Defining Time Show on Fifth Wrist Radio. Fifth Wrist is all about brutally honest watch reviews for the community, and it's set up by enthusiasts for enthusiasts. So before we get into it, please like and subscribe to the podcast because it all helps, and head over to Fifth Wrist on Instagram and jump onto the website and review one of your watches. So my name's Anthony, I'm from Defining Time, and I'm joined by my co-host Vinny. How are you going, mate?
Very good today, thanks, Anth. How are you?
Yeah, good. After some small technical difficulties, we're finally doing it, which is great. Today, we are going to have a chat to a lovely man called Tom from Watch Adventure. G'day, Tom. How are you going?
G'day, boys. Good to be here with you, everyone.
It's going to be fun. So, sorry it took us, nearly 40 minutes to get started, but we got there anyway. Before we get into it, I do just want to get a quick shout out to my wife, who it was my birthday yesterday, and she went to the trouble with some help from Vinny in making me a Moser cake. So I thought that was pretty cool. And if you jump onto Instagram, my profile, you can have a look. But she actually made the cake and then got the topper. But it was very, very nice. So thanks for your help, Vinny.
I had nothing to do with it. It was all Mel. So yeah, she did a great job.
And happy birthday for next day. Yesterday.
Thank you very much. And now, Tom, before we get started, I've been asked by Alex, are you wearing your special costume that you promised him you would?
Look, I'm not, but I tell Alex that it's definitely on order. It just hasn't arrived in the mail yet. So,
okay. We have no idea what you're talking about, so we'll leave it at that.
Won't ask any questions.
All right. Before we get into wrist checks and drink checks, what we want to do today is we want to get to know Tom a little bit better. Tom's a great enthusiast from the Melbourne watch community, and we'll have a bit of chat to him about his watches and some of the things that he gets up to. And then we're going to do a battle. And the battle today is vintage watches. And what we're going to do is 1K or below 1K, below 10K, and then no limit. So each of us are going to pick three watches each and have a chat about, you know, why they're cool, why we think they could be part of a three-watch vintage collection. So it's going to be interesting because I know nothing about vintage, and it was quite interesting actually doing this. More to come on that a little bit later. But let's do some wrist checks. So we'll go with our special guest, Tom. What are you wearing today on your wrist?
Today I'm actually wearing my 37mm Grand Seiko, reference SBGW231. It was the watch that I think Hodinkee was selling this one when they were available about 18 months ago, and I've had it for about 18 months. And it would probably be, if not the favorite, right up there with my favorite watch. Gorgeous piece. Yeah.
It is an awesome, awesome watch, and it's such a perfect size, and it does it all. So very nice. Vinny, what about you?
Today I've got my Tudor Pelagos LHD on. I think, you know, Watch Adventure, Tom himself, I thought I'd have my most adventure-inspired piece on today, so I'm rocking that one.
Well done.
Very good, very good. And I've got my Rolex BLNR. I thought it was a BLNR day today, so I thought I'd just do that. And drinks, what are we drinking? Tom, what about you?
I've got a special surprise for all you whiskey drinkers and gin drinkers. Listen to this. I hope you can hear that.
That's the
top of my Victoria Bitter can. Oh. I'm not going to pretend, boys, that I drink whiskey and all the rest of the fancy stuff. I'm a beer man, and this is as simple as it gets and as good as it gets, if you ask me. So I've got a couple ready to go.
Double parked VBs, that is true blue as it gets, and we love it. We absolutely love it.
We're starting to get a few international listeners, which is fantastic, and thank you to all of them. Can we describe VB? Go on, Tom. Give us a description of VB.
Oh, look, VB would be a quintessential beer, a bogan beer or a hillbilly beer, I guess you could say. It's full flavored, readily available. I guess it's very Australian, that drink, I suppose. Yeah.
It is very Australian. All right, Vinny, what about you?
Don't have Black Label today, which is good. I've mixed it up with Woodford Reserve Kentucky bourbon whiskey. So,
so you can drink scotch and bourbon.
Yeah, I don't mind. I'm not picky. I'm too young to be picky at the moment. So, you know, I'll just drink anything that's put in front of me. But this one is particularly nice.
Very good, very good. And just for Alex, I have a mid-strength, low-carb, although it's not mid-strength, but anyway, one of my favorite pure blondes. Can't get enough of it. So, all right, let's get into it. So we wanted to, you know, we really want to get to know Tom, and this podcast is all about getting to know our watch community and who our enthusiasts are. So, Tom, tell us a little bit about yourself and why are you a watch enthusiast?
Yeah, look, again, boys, thanks for having me on the show. I guess it's my earliest memories of having a watch. I think I might have been 4 or 5 and we're on Christmas holidays, and I bought, or mum bought me, either a navy blue or black Casio F91 digital watch, or it was a Pulsar, something or other. But I remember having that for a birthday present. And that, yeah, I would have been 5 or 6. So that's a very, very long time ago. My dad had a Seiko that we lost in the ocean growing up at Christmas time as well. And he wasn't a real watch nerd or anything. And that's probably where it started. I had a Rip Curl watch when I was probably 12, 13, 14. I remember the bezel got popped off playing footy. We sent it back and then we got a brand new watch. I remember it was a... I had a gold bezel and a green dial and a leather strap, and it was obviously awesome. For my 21st birthday, I got a Citizen Eco Drive. It was a Nighthawk or one of those aviator models, and that was pretty cool. And this was just because I thought watches were cool, and that's probably how I'm enthusiastic about them, because I think whether you're a woman, whether you're a man, young or old, I think we buy watches and wear them because we think they're cool, and they are cool in a sense. So, and after that, I think I always wanted to be like James Bond, and my first real watch I bought myself was a Planet Ocean, you know, just the standard 42mm. I think it was Quantum of Solace might have done one, the titanium version perhaps. This was an earlier model, ETA Movement, saved up. And at the time, it was maybe $3,500, and I bought it from a US site. And it was when the Aussie dollar was sort of parity with the US. And I remember looking at the Rolexes from, some listeners will know, Alex Pig on Chrono 24, the Hong Kong dealer. And some of those Rolexes were, I think the subs were maybe 4.5, and maybe the matte dial subs were 5.5. And at the time, I didn't really know matte dials and glossy dials. I just knew that I liked the older ones, and naturally I couldn't afford it. I mean, $3,500 for, you know, a 23, 24 year old is an absorbent amount of money. But anyway, I popped on it, and I just thought I was the coolest. So that's probably how that sort of journey started. And it wasn't, I had sort of no influences or people, nobody in my life was really into watches or anything like that. My brother likes watches as well. But there was no sort of outlet to explore the hobby, or, you know, get any sort of extra information. I never knew that Hodinkee was a, you know, a publication until probably a few years ago. So that's probably where it started. And then I had that Planet Ocean and I wore it every day. I didn't even take it off to go to bed for probably 5 years. And testament to how good those Omegas are and the coaxial movement, I reckon, when I sold it to buy a Rolex Hub probably 4 or 5 years ago, it was 2 seconds a day. And you think, that's just so good. What a watch. So that's probably my journey until I met you guys maybe 18 months ago. And then obviously things got a bit crazy after that, didn't it? So thanks.
Downhill from there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So now you're into your sort of, Not collecting side of things, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but how do you choose a watch? What are some of the things that have to be in a watch for you to like it?
Yeah, it's interesting how we all have our different sort of things that we go through when we buy a watch. I've only got a small collection. I've got 5 watches at the moment, and all my watches have to be wearable, and they have to be able to serve their purpose without too much fuss. So first and foremost is, can I wear it, you know, every day, or if not every other day? It's got a, and I sort of, my friends tell me I dress like an 80-year-old man. So it's also got to look good with what I'm wearing. And again, obviously the aesthetics plays in a lot to do with that as well. So it's got to be very pleasing to the eye. And what I touched on earlier, it has to be cool. If I'm choosing a watch, I think to myself, if I saw somebody else in the wild with that watch, what would I think, or how would that make me feel? And if I look at that watch and think, wow, that's cool, you know, that's another sort of tick box I have. But most of all, it's wearability and durability, and yeah, it's got to be cool.
So just quickly, because I want to, you know, you can tell your friends, they don't know what they're talking about.
No idea.
Tom, you have some serious style, whether it's herringbone pants or, you know, some awesome sports blazer. You know, where did all that come from? Because it's quite unique. It's quite English sort of style.
It is. I'm not too sure where it came from. And I like, I do like antiques and older furniture and that sort of. We talk about patina with watches, but I like the patina with probably all things, whether it's steel or wood, or like, I like leather and shoes. And I don't know where that sort of came from. I really liked Indiana Jones growing up. Harrison Ford was just the best. And for all the Star Wars nerds out there, my brother was Luke Skywalker and I was Han Solo. Because of Harrison Ford, but maybe Indiana Jones, because he had that sort of swaggery style with that sort of dressed up but ready to go look, with hats and boots and so I don't know where that came from. It's somewhere along the lines, because naturally growing up, we all sort of watched the same movies, 50 times over again. So I guess somewhere along the way, that's where that came from. Yeah,
absolutely. I couldn't absolutely attest for your style. I remember meeting you for the first time, and not only was the watch on your wrist amazing, but yeah, I was like, damn, this guy's got style, you know, he's looking good. Almost felt underdressed in a pub, and that's no easy feat. But also the thing that, when we first all caught up together, the energy and the passion that you have for watches instantly is translated through just that, like, this is cool. I like this because I feel cool when I wear this. And telling a story of how you got into watches just reflects that perfectly, like your energy, your passion, and what speaks to you. It's not about, you know, how it looks, other people looking at, oh, that guy, you know, has that watch. It's just like, I feel cool wearing this piece. This is my watch. And it's absolutely great, you know, to have met you and keep you close in this community, because, yeah, fantastic. You touched on before, you've got 5 watches. And I know, again, a lot of us in our circle, they have excess of 10 up to 20, not naming names. Shout out to the Chunky Wrist and JP Melbs, friends of the show. But why is 5 sort of the happy number? Because I know for Anthony and myself, we like 5 as well, or I've got 4 at the moment. But around that number, it's not a lot, but it just seems to work well for us. And why is that the magic number for you?
Yeah, look, I think at one stage I had 7 or 8 watches, and I've got a sort of an office job. So I'm not sort of, you know, out in the wild banging up my watches every day. And so I've got a couple of dress watches, a couple of vintage watches, and, you know, weekend sort of warrior. It got to the stage where I wasn't wearing a couple of watches for maybe 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 days. And it was, I wanted to wear those watches. They just weren't getting worn. And it was a bit like, well, this is just a waste of money sitting in the box. I'm not here to, keep them safe and keep them out of harm's way. I want these watches. I don't want to wear them and I want to enjoy them. So I sort of, culled the herd a little bit. I sort of morphed into three sort of watches into 2 nicer pieces and, shrunk the collection that way. And this way, it's, you get to wear them all as much as you like. And I know some of these, some of us watch nerds have the same affliction, but I've already worn 3 watches today. So, you know, having 5, I get to roll through them, you know, sometimes in 2 days.
That's gold. I'm not one for the afternoon change up, but like, I totally get it. I totally get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Changing to your evening watch.
Correct.
Right. So it's interesting, though, because as you do that, and, you know, I have the five that I sort of wear mostly, but it gets harder and harder as you go on, because then you see something else that you like and you're thinking to yourself, shit, which one? I don't know, maybe I just won't get it and keep what I've got. But have you ever come to sort of that decision where you're thinking, gee, I'd like one of those, but I can't justify it because I don't want to get rid of anything in my collection?
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's the longer that that we're into this sort of stuff, you can be patient. You know, the watches, you know, albeit sometimes you want something that's there's only a few out there, or it's limited, or it's already sold, you have to be patient, and the watch is still going to be available in 6 months or 12 months or 18 months' time. So if you can show some restraint, and if you do want to move on a piece or sell a piece and put some cash towards it, or maybe sell two pieces to get that other the other one, I'm sort of in the spot where there's not much that I want to let go of, and I'm in a position now where I can't exactly just save up any more money and trump for a watch. So it's something would have to be sold, and the only watch that I may part with, you know, isn't worth it. It's not going to get me where I want to be anyway. So right now it's pretty locked in. But as we know, you do more research and your tastes change, and you might see something that they really have to have, and it may be something that you thought you wouldn't sell, all of a sudden is on the market, and away she goes. But I do think sometimes, gee whiz, you know, that Lange annual calendar can be purchased if I just sell these two watches. Maybe one day, who knows?
Yeah, I think one of the other things, and I'm going to do a whole podcast on this, but we were chatting about it the other day when we were sort of setting this up. And it's the idea of, do you need to actually own the watch to enjoy it? And is the research side of things and potentially the hunt, is it enough to sort of fill that void of, I need this thing? What are your thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I'm massive for, you know, appreciation of watches, you know, from afar, if you like. You know, there's some watches that I know won't fit me aesthetically, you know, they're not going to be in my collection because they don't 100% work. But it doesn't mean that I don't think it's absolutely ripping and super, super cool. I'm not a huge, for some reason, blue dial watch fan. Like, I can't see myself having a blue dial watch, but I see so many blue dial watches and I think, wow, it's a really beautiful piece. Definitely, you know, learning and having the ability to appreciate your mate's watch and you know, appreciating watches from a distance is something that we should all sort of try and aspire to. And also the fact that you can't have everything. No. If we wanted to buy everything we wanted to, we'd just be recycling our collection flat out, and we wouldn't be able to enjoy a piece and make memories with them either. So,
It's true. What about you, Vinny?
I'm advocate for it now. I think when I was earlier on, like, oh, I need to have a Speedy, I need to have a Sub, I need to have one of everything that makes watch collecting, like, the iconic pieces. And that's, like, the generic version of collecting, is to have one of the iconic pieces. But I've definitely learned, catching up with everyone on a regular basis, I don't need to own that piece to appreciate it for exactly what it is. And it makes it even more of a treat to see it not so often. For example, something like JP's Overseas. Yeah. I love that watch to death, but it doesn't mean I have to own it, because I know every time I see JP, he'll happily bring it along. I can marvel at it, because at the moment for me, it's just not within reach. It's not feasible. Yeah. I've shifted from one side to the other and going, okay, like to keep my collection small and appreciate everything from afar, because exactly like Tom said, you just can't own them all.
Yeah, but I think as well for you, Vinny, like, you've done some great week on the wrist reviews on watches and things like that, and you had one of your grails in your hands for a week. And I suppose this is probably not the watch to ask about it, but if you could have a watch just for a week and enjoy it and then give it back, and then you've created some memories, you've written up a beautiful article about it, does that help, do you think, that you actually got to touch and feel it, or does that make the craving even worse?
This is a very bittersweet feeling. It's a very good question. It's better to have loved and lost than to not have loved at all. And I think the week on the wrist was, first of all, shout out to Dane at the Watch Vault for letting me have it for the week. Felt head over heels with that thing. And I think it has made the craving stronger. And every time I think about buying a watch, I always now compare it with all right, if I just put it away and saved it, how much closer would I be to that Vacheron Traditionnel? I definitely, having it for the week solidified, okay, this is the end game for me. And it was definitely a good experience for me to have that and experience it, because then now I know for sure, that's the end game. That's my goal. Instead of getting to the end and going, oh, should I really do this? Now there's no doubt that, if I can one day have the funds to go and purchase one, I think I would. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it does. And I think we'll continue this conversation when we try and I really would like to do a full show just on this and really dive deep into it, because there's a week trying it on, there's trying it on in the shop, there's having your friend bring it to a get together, and then there's just not having it at all, or there's those things on chrono that you can put your wrist up and see it and visualize it. But anyway, let's get back to Tom. So outside of watches, but complementing watches, what are some of the other hobbies or things that you're into?
Yeah, look, it was right around the time I finished playing Aussie Rules footy about 18 months ago that I said to my fiance, I need to get out there and, maybe explore this watch hobby. And that's when I reached out to Red Bar and met you guys, which has just been awesome. And I'm a guy that obviously I wear my watches. I'm lucky enough to have a couple of vintage Rolexes, and one of those is a 1680 sub from 1977. And I've been on hikes with that thing. I recently started surfing again with my bro. 1977 sub, got it serviced. Got it pressure tested, and the 77 sub was out there at 13th Beach down at Bowen Heads, surfing some waves. So, and
bloody I know awesome. That,
so a few guys would think that I'm crazy. It was tucked under the wetsuit, but still, it was, survive. Everything was cool. And without doubt, when I'm laying on my surfboard and I just, look down at my wrist and there's this, 43-year-old watch that just looks as cool as ever. I felt like I was killing it.
Absolutely. So surfing a little bit. I was going to say, if we go back to your collection, I love that watch, the sub, and I love that it's on that beautiful beige, the beige NATO. I think it's just the best combination of sort of, it's just got it. It has it all going all day, every day. It rocks. What's your favorite watch in your collection?
Yeah, look, it's, I am lucky enough to have those Rolexes and a 1675 GMT. And I've always wanted a matte dial sub. It was 10 years ago I wanted one and it was out of reach. Now I have one. And meeting JP Melbs and you guys 18 months ago, JP Melbs had had a Grand Seiko when it was the first one I'd ever seen in person. And I was blown away. I was just blown away how good it was. And then in my search, I obviously picked up my own Grand Seiko, something that fitted me and that I love. So the SBG W231, it's on par with my favorite watch. And for some reason, it makes me feel so, vindicated for buying what you like, I guess. It feels like every time I look at it, the watch is, it's mine. It was from new. So I get to make my own memories with it. And it goes very close to my favorite watch. Yeah. And the thing is about it, the shape of the case, and it's very boring and sober. But the way that it's finished, obviously Grand Seiko are the masters at that. The Zeratsu polishing and the indices, the way that it's done, the way that it catches light and looks back at you is just something else. And that you're one of those ones where you have to have it on wrist and have to wear it for a day or so to sort of realize what it is. So that's probably my favorite watch, because it sort of It sort of maybe morphed me or educated on me on maybe finishing and why a watch is finished and set the way that it is. The Grand Seiko is pretty special. Yep.
I did not see that coming. What about you, Vinny? Did you think it would be the Grand Seiko?
Those three watches that you mentioned are actually the three watches I always think of when I think of Tom. And it's that Pepsi GMT, which is absolutely banging condition. Same as that 1680 sub. I didn't really get the whole Submariner, vintage Submariner thing until I saw your particular example, Tom. It is an absolute ripper. And I thought, yep, I get it. It's bloody cool. It's damn cool. And to think that you're going surfing with it, using it for what it's like kind of intended for, being submerged, even more points for you for that. And then seeing also how much you love that Grand Seiko, no brainer for me. Those are the three watches that I obviously just associate with you. So no surprises.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, bro.
I think the 1680 is probably my fave because I love it on that NATO. But to be really nerdy here, the date disc on that watch, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but it's like this silvery color and just the font of the numerals. Like it gets me. That is super nerdy, but it just does.
Really, really nerdy, and something that in my research with these things, I only picked up at the last minute that of those. And hate to be the podcast talks about Rolexes and the stupid details, but we're doing it.
Let's go.
About the a lot of the silvery disc wheels were changed out with servicing. Years after they were produced, and when I got this one and it had obviously the silvery disc wheel, open sixes and nines, and my birthday is the 9th. Today's the 9th, and it's got the open 9 on it today. I'm thinking, it's pretty cool.
Awesome. Very good. Yeah. We'll have to get a picture and put it up.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, cool. Let's get this going. I'm keen to battle with you guys and see where we can go with this and keep talking watches. So we're going to do, as I said before, it's a battle of vintage with someone that knows vintage somewhat, although he's modest that he's into them, but not an expert by any means. To two guys that, Vinny, I can't say that anymore because you've got your King Seiko now.
I'm still very novice.
You're getting there, and I've got no idea, so we'll just go with that. But under 1K, under 10K, and no limit. And the rules originally were pre-1970, and then I found it too hard, so I made it 1970s included and then pre that. So we'll start with Tom. He can kick us off and tell us what your sub 1K is, and we'll save the no limits for the end.
Yeah, right. So the sub 1K, I've gone something that's it's attainable and something that I would wear and something that I would want to wear every day if I had just the one watch. And it is a 1960s Yema skin diver. It's a Inca block 200 meter dive watch. Pretty plain, pretty basic. There's one on Chrono 24 I'm looking at now. It's got a nice sort of, standard sort of bezel, cool looking watch, and I'd get it serviced and I'd get it pressure tested and that'd be mine. $1,000.
Yeah. Good one. Very good. Love that style as well. It's very cool. Awesome. Good pick. Vinny, what about you?
Yeah. So I think I've sort of cheated a bit here, but I pick a watch that I actually own.
See, Tom, I told you he would.
You did say that.
It's sub $1,000 King Seiko 4402, and it has the sort of first iteration of Taro Tanaka's grammar of design, which we associate with Grand Seiko today. So lots of polished facets. For under $1,000 Aussie, there's not. I don't know. I couldn't find anything else that I just thought I loved as much as this one because it gives me all the Grand Seiko vibes, and it has the Zaratsu polishing on the hands and the indices. And it's an absolute bargain. They can be hard to find in decent condition as well. But for the price, I just roll the dice. I think it's worth it because I'm so happy with mine.
Yeah, it's so cool, and so you. Awesome.
Thank you.
You've done well. All right, cool. I have gone with a Omega Classic Mechanical 1966, 34 mil, center seconds, manual wind. So it's just that quintessential Omega. It's not a Seamaster or anything like that. It's just a plain dial Omega, silver dial with some stick markers and those beautiful sort of stick hands that they made that curved at the end, which followed the curvature of the dial.
Yeah, I love that.
It's just so cool. Like, and this one's $676. And the lugs, I mean, Omega were known. I mean, all the watch brands were doing it back in those 50s and 60s. But I think for me, this one has, if you can picture the Lange 1815 lugs where they sort of come out a tiny bit and then they shoot straight up. And it's that kind of style. And I picture this on a black NATO, a grey NATO, a beige NATO, like whatever colour NATO you want.
Don't start with the NATOs again, Ant. Come on.
Okay. What about a custom-made alligator, double-sided padded strap? Can we say that?
Yeah, or glossy, like glossy alligator. Like it would just be awesome. I think some of these watches, and you think of the money that the, you know, $670 for something like this, even yours, Vinny, you know, the one that you've got now, like there's so much value and joy and fun to be had at this price range that every time I do these things, I just think to myself, bloody hell, like you could stick one of these in your collection, keep it for 30 years and it would be super, super cool.
Yeah, and whilst we're on this sub 1,000 or around that 1,000 mark, in my search, I just wanted to give a shout out to a website, watches83, the number 8, the number 3.com.
Yeah.
It's a vintage watch shop that I come across. I think it's there in Barcelona. And if you're bored and you want to waste $500 or $1,000 on, you know, that, like those sort of generic name brands that were obviously just getting made by the bigger brands. So much cool stuff on there for, you know, $500, $300, $1,000. So just whoever watches83.com are, cool site, awesome watches.
Yeah, nice. We'll put some pictures up a couple of days after this goes live, because we want to let some people have the suspense for a little while. But then after a couple of days, we'll stick a picture up on Instagram, and you can have a look at the watches that we're talking about. Because yeah, super, super cool, especially for the price. It's just awesome.
Mm.
All right, let's mix it up, Vinny. We'll go with you. So sub 10K vintage. Where did you go?
Just before I share my answer, if you want to have a go at this challenge, hashtag us with your story, Futurist Radio, have a go, and also tell us where we went wrong on this one, because we'll be happy to hear it. I've gone with the Omega Seamaster 300 from 1972. It's got the twisted lugs, sword-style hands. It's got that sort of old-school military look that shares the military vibes of, like, the issued Seamasters. I know that obviously the price range jumps if you want a real deal, paper certified military Seamaster. But for $9,600 Australian dollars, it's just absolutely gorgeous. And it carries that same sort of feeling with Tom's Submariner. You know, Rolex enthusiast, please don't kill me. But it gives me that same sort of like tool watch, wear it anywhere, do anything vibe. And I'm sure if you did the same thing, service pressure test, it would be just as capable today as it was in 1972, and it just looks beautiful.
And that's this is one of the watches where I was saying before, if somebody was wearing this at a watch meet, I'd go a bit giddy and go, whoa, that is so cool.
yeah, very good, very good. Tom, let's go.
All right, so I'm going to change it up a little bit here. I'm going to go with, and I don't have a chronograph in my collection at the moment. I'm going to go with a Leonidas CP2. These are sort of in the frame of those old, some Bundeswehr, whatever they were called. But back
that's,
in the days.
That's a technical term. Yep.
That's right, is it? Yeah. Yeah, so Leonidas CP2, two register chrono. And it's probably, I don't know, maybe between, I guess, 6,000 and 10,000 bucks probably. 43 millimeter. So cool. Obviously, you get the old, I think it would be tritium by then, but very sort of sober, as it's not a, the registers are obviously the same color as the dial, but it's got that sort of military do anything sort of spec. And for, I've had one watch, less than 10,000 bucks. Yeah, this is from the 60s, and I reckon this is just rocking. And they got the really, really cool, the seconds hand. It's got a big sort of fat sort of triangle on the bottom of it with some lume in there. Cool. Really cool.
Very good.
Awesome.
All right. I'm going to come in with the big blow here.
Okay.
All right. Let me clear my throat. So how I picked this watch, I wanted one watch. I always like to have, and I probably – It's interesting because I don't have a watch like this in my collection, but I've been looking for one for a while. And I thought when I build these collections, I always want something that's a bit funky or that's got a weird shape or something like that that's just sits a bit different on the wrist. You can wear it for different occasions. And I wanted to make sure that I had something like this in here. So I've gone with a very rare Lamania Bullhead Chronograph. This one's got a black dial, and this one is new old stock for $8,134. It is stunning. So it's from approximately 1970. It's got a caliber, manual wind caliber, two register chronograph, but it's the old, the 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock register with no dates. So nothing sort of making it non-symmetrical other than the text for the writing. But manual wind, caliber 1872, 48 hour power reserve. It's 38 mil by 43 mil. So it's not a small watch by any means. Plexiglass, comes on this textile beige strap. And yeah, I've been eyeing off a few of these Bullhead chronographs for a little while because they just sort of sit really sort of buff on the wrist. They stick out. They're a real sort of bulldozer, so to speak. pardon the pun. But yeah, do you guys like Bullheads? What do you guys think of them?
Did not see that coming at all. Mm-hmm.
I saw in my search for these chronographs, I saw a Bullhead chrono and I thought that's killer. And yeah, the first time, I've only seen one in real life, and I think might have been Dimmy had one, a Seiko Bullhead maybe.
Yes. Yep.
And he did have one, didn't he? And when I felt it, and that was sort of the first vintage Seiko I'd been able to sort of put on and have a look at, man, so much watch. So good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome choice.
But even just it's a manual wind with a crown at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so cool. And I know Omega makes some really beautiful. They've done some awesome re-editions for great prices. And theirs are at the crowns at 6 o'clock with the two pushes at sort of 11 and 1. And yeah, they're just funky. They're just different. They're, you know, you're not going to see too many around either. And I think that's pretty cool. Like, but to find something that's, you know, near on 50 years old, new old stock, you get to put the first scratches on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, 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 very cool.
Why aren't we buying these watches?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Because we're idiots and this is the fun. Yeah, hey, this is the bit we're talking about before where you can buy you don't have to buy the watch to enjoy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You can just text your mate before you get to the get together and say, you make sure you've got that in your satchel.
Exactly.
I want to get a grubby.
How are we going to do the grand finale? What's the – do you want me to just run this? Who wants to go last? And we'll count back from then.
Guest
has to go last, I think. Guest? All right.
Okay, thank you.
Let's do it. All right, Vinny, you went first last time, so I'll double back here. Now, this one was really difficult for me because it no limit. Like, how much do you spend and what do you buy and what's important to you? And I just want to tell you where I went first and then I'll tell you where I landed. I hope that's okay. But, you know, I love the Cartier Cintre. And, you know, there's some beautiful ones from 1924 that are just ridiculously stunning. They don't keep time very well. They're not very reliable. And for obvious reasons, right? But I think it's the part about that the design has not changed for so many years. But that's where I wanted to go. But I couldn't find one. Couldn't find one for sale. And there's just not enough of them information about them on the internet. So I have settled for, and this is the reason why I picked the Omega at the start, because I wanted that to be my dress watch. Then the Bullhead is my funky watch that I can sort of wear, you know, for different casual occasions. And then I've gone with a Rolex Explorer 2 1655 steel matte black dial 1975. It's just insane. Wow. Just insane.
I was nodding my head at every syllable you were expressing there.
So $28,122 Australian. Again, this one's in immaculate condition. I would take it straight off the jingly jangly bracelet and put it on a beautiful beige black NATO. And I would happily wear that every day of the week because it's just a stunning watch and something that I've always, always, always admired. So there you have it. That is
I now know the title of the next episode of our podcast. Our next podcast will be Watches That Won't Go on a NATO by the Defining Time Show. Because there aren't many that will not be put on a NATO.
Well, you all saw the Elang and Son that I tagged on that pink NATO today, and that was stunning. Naughty. How good was that? All right, so there you have it. That is my – that is, and you know what? I suppose the interesting part to this is for a lot of vintage collectors out there, you know, this is a fantastic watch. I mean, a lot of people know that, and it's a very well-respected watch, but it's also an uneducated vintage person's pick because it's – not so much hyped, but it's talked about. It's you know, it's all over the forums. It's all over Instagram, and it's just a very well known watch. But because I don't have the knowledge of going to the deep into the vintage stuff. I'm sure I've done all right, but I think that was just important to say. Vinny, over to you.
Okay, so vintage watch. I think the reason you buy a vintage watch is to live in today, but with the thoughts of a previous life. Is you're putting on this watch, you want to feel like you're living in a different time. And so if that's the feeling I'm chasing and I go, what is the watch that will give me that best feeling? I've picked a Patek Philippe reference 2526, which is the, again, OG Calatrava, time only. The one I'm looking at the moment is from a Philips auction because money's no object. I can buy whatever I like. I can go to a Philips auction and I can spend 62,500 Swiss francs on a Calatrava. But this one happens to be co-signed by the retailer Serpico and Leno, which is in Spain, which probably bumped up the price even more. But even if it didn't have a co-sign, I'd be more than happy with this because it is just the perfect expression of a dress watch. And if I put that on and I'm wearing a suit or I'm going to a dinner, I feel like I'm not in 2020. I'm in a different decade. Mobile phones aren't a thing. Laptops, computers, what are those? I am driving a manual car, no hydraulic steering, no power steering, and I'm off smoking cigars and, you know, doing whatever because I'm in a different life. And I think this watch would be the one I want on my wrist for that. Express that expression of getting a different feeling from my timepiece. So that was my
nice.
And these they have the enamel dials, is that right?
I believe
they're sort of off white eggshelly enamel dial. Yep. Yeah, just delicious.
Delicious. Yeah. I love it. I love that. That is great language for a watch. But no, you're right. But interesting, Vinny, because what was your second watch?
My second watch?
Yeah.
The 10K? That was a Seamaster 300. So
you've gone three. So that's your sport. That's your sports watch. Then you've got two dress watches. Yeah, okay. That's about you.
The vintage, also, as someone who's not an expert and totally novice and just only dipping my toes into vintage pieces, I haven't quite got the confidence in wearing a vintage watch every day because I know the steel's a little bit softer or things are a bit more delicate in some cases, and I wear my watches quite hard, I've learnt. My Pelagos, if you've seen photos on my Instagram, is scratched to bits, which I love, but I'm not sure I would love that on a 2526 or a King Seiko. So I think my vintage pieces will be reserved for, you know, sort of dressier occasions. So that's why I've sort of lent that way in my in this challenge.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. All right. Wrap us up, Tom. Hit us with the big blow. Where do we go from here?
So I've got no idea how much this watch would perhaps be a mil, maybe 2 mil now. I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good price bracket.
I thought so as well. I thought so. It's appropriate. Well. Yeah. Just swipe your plastic for this one, please. I've chosen something that I would wear, obviously, and that sort of still suits my style. I'm sort of generally speaking, I don't like to have people draw attention to my watches. So much so I've really been stopped or have anybody asked, oh, what's that on your wrist with anything that I've had. And to that point, if I could end everything and if I had money to spend, I would buy a minute repeater with a plain dial. And I've chosen a Patek Philippe 2419 minute repeater. I think this one has been sold a couple of times, last time for, I think, $700,000 in Hong Kong, purely because watches are obviously traditional, and there's a certain amount of romanticism that I have with them. And to have somebody, 100 years ago in a workshop without electricity and without these machinery and tools, make wristwatches that can tell the time perfectly and, heaven forbid, make something that can chime and tell you the time, it goes past blowing my mind. I can't even possibly fathom how that could even, like, people could even do this. Yeah. So to have a minute repeater from, I think this is maybe from the 50s, yeah. Or the 40s, to have a minute repeater on wrist and nobody would know anything, and I'd sit back in a rocking chair, maybe with my VB, and I would I'd let it chime, and it would just be a magical thing. And yeah. I think if you showed a young person what this watch can do and what it looks like, just a simple plain old watch and what it can do, and then if you popped open the back and saw what would be a magnificently finished glowing movement by Patek, I think it would inspire anybody to ask more questions about how is this even a thing, for one, and how is it possible? And I think it sort of encapsulates what fascinates me with watches and watchmaking. So awesome. Patek 2419 minute repeater.
Tasty.
That is a brilliant choice, and I'm looking at one now, and it's actually the sticks and markers will be very similar to what Vinny chose for his.
Correct. Yep.
But the thing I love about vintage watches, and I wish that modern watches would do this as well, and even we'll talk about one in a minute that kind of thinks they're doing it, but I'm not sure that it is the crowns look like afterthoughts. And I love it.
I absolutely
love it. Like, I was thinking about putting a bigger crown on my Habring because I wanted the crown to stick up and out. I don't know what it is, but it just looks insane. It's so good. So, yeah. Anyway, another bit of a nerd thing there.
Yeah, and look, it's one of those ones where the pocket watch movements and the way they do those sort of three bridges, I think aesthetically they are the best looking movements, hands down. And Patek do some beautiful ones. And there's a Breguet minute repeater that was just sold on Chrono 24 that, for some reason I was watching for about $100,000. It was a new one, but it had a tribute with a new old vintage minute repeater movement in there with that sort of three bridges. And I thought, oh, that is just to die for.
Because even if we just talk about the crown for a second, even the Oris big crown, like it says it's a big crown and it is a big crown, but it's not like that. And it's not like the vintage watches, the way they used to do it. And even if you look at the old Reversos, they're really thin crowns, but they stick up out and over the front of the dial. And I, for some reason, I don't know what it is, I love that aesthetic. And a lot of those mid-century military watches have it as well. It's like they all just had one crown that they used and they shared it, whether it was 55 mil or 25 mil, same crown.
correct.
All right. Well, look, that's some really interesting watches there. I think, Tom, I think we'll give you the win for that one, and I wouldn't have expected anything less, but, yeah, very good, very good.
Thank you.
All righty. We will, and absolutely, Vinny said it before, but please go and do this yourself. These battles are so much fun. Take your time, because I know that when you're doing this by yourself, you might just be sitting there going, yep, I'd take that one, and that one. That's easy. But really go deep into your refining your searches to things that are important to you, and then put some photos up on Instagram, hashtag Fifth Risk Radio, and we'll have a look as well. All right, we will start to wrap it up. So, Vinny, you had a favorite review from the Fifth Risk website this week.
Yes, I did. So the favorite review I have is by The Traveling Timepiece, and Traveling has one L. It's called the original Speedmaster Mark 40. This watch is made famous by being Climber. It was his grandfather's watch, and I think we all know the 70s colors of this Speedmaster. It's not like the Moonwatch at all. And this was first a really well-written review. Not that the reviews on the website have to be, but it was really well-written, so I'll give credit to the reviewer for that. But also, it talks about how temperamental the date change is, and not mm-hmm. to talk shit about this watch straight off the bat, but this kind of stuff you wouldn't get from a publication or a press release or someone who's trying to sell this watch themselves. They're just, you know, they'd probably gloss over it or anything like that. But, you know, Fifth Risk is all for the community. It's all for the enthusiasts. And I think it's really important that we outline some of the nuances about these kind of watches that you might not know otherwise until you've owned it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's a 70s piece, beautiful, bright colors,
yeah.
Quirky, different size, different profile, and really well outlined here. So the review is by The Traveling Timepiece.
Very good. Thank you very much. That's awesome. It's those colors on that dial are sort of like Alan Silberstein watches, where they're sort of that green, red, blue.
Yep.
Very, very cool. Awesome.
Isn't it funny looking at the, you know, that obviously would have come up with a sub 10 battle we just did. The 70s and 60s chronos and, stopwatch sort of type watches, they just use so much color. Just wherever you like, just whack some color on there, orange there and blue there and red there. And man, yeah. It looks good. So good.
Absolutely. Yep. All right, let's go follow some people on Instagram. So, Tom, we'll start with you as our guest. Who is your person to go follow?
Yeah, sure. So a guy I've been following for a long time now is Homie Liu, HomieLiu. Really, really cool watches. He's got great tastes. He's got varying photographs on there. They're always really, really sharp. And a great follow for lots of variety. So, shout out to Homie Liu.
Yeah, he's a great one. He's someone I've been following for a long time. And what I like about him is he's all over it. Like he's liking stuff all the time. He's actually fully immersed, just sort of into the community and wanting to spread the love. He puts some great pictures up. He has some fantastic watches as well. Very good. Thank you, Vinny. What about you?
Great. Great suggestion, Tom. Homie Liu's been following me since forever. And, yeah, always first to respond to polls or, you know, questions or anything like that. Fellow deadbeat owner for you, Anth, yes. With the geophysics.
Yeah, such an awesome piece.
Just really happy that you've mentioned him. So my suggestion is _WatchDelorean. Someone I've been chatting to a lot recently. Fantastic photographer. Has an Explorer as well, has a Grand Seiko GMT, a whole bunch of amazing watches, but just takes the most brilliant pictures and, yeah, all-round nice guy. So that's the...
Very good.
_WatchDelorean.
I follow him already as well, which is cool. All right, we're going to jump on the plane and head over to Germany for my follow. So he is called New Watch Guy, but it's N-U-E Watch Guy. He's from Nuremberg in Germany, and his bio says, just another watch collector, but diversity over monobrandism. And I think when you start looking at his collection, you know, he's got Mings, he's got F. Pigeon, he's got Armin Strom, he's got Habering, he's got Alang & Zollner, just awesome, takes great, great wrist shots, really cool, eclectic collection. Obviously loves the independents, but he's got some Pateks as well. And yeah, just a really cool feed for people to go follow. All right. I think that's a wrap. We are done. Awesome. Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on and speaking to us. It was a lot of fun, and you can take the win for the vintage with your minute repeater Patek.
If only that could be the out music, the repeater gone away. That'd be something.
We'll have to stick to the Fifth Wrist Radio intro and outro for now, but that's a good idea for another show. Yeah. Yeah, go, Tom.
I just wanted to say, to you guys and to Alex and to Rob, really, really love what you're doing. Keep it going. I know it does take a lot of effort. I've probably listened to maybe 7 or 8 or 9 watch podcasts at the moment. It's always nice to have some Aussie voices on your pod. And, I think there's a very special guest coming up as well. So congratulations on that next hit coming up. And what I really love about what watch podcasts is, I know with like Scottish watch podcast, a lot of mumbo jumbo going on there, guys. But I still love you, and I still listen to it. I like us because we're talking about watches, and I love talking about watches. So yeah, just a big shout out and thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Tom. That means a lot. And we, as I said, at the start, this is by enthusiasts for enthusiasts. There's a real community aspect to what we're trying to do, and getting people out there and talking about watches and just sharing the love. So thank you so much. It really means a lot to us. So for everyone else, head over to Fifth Wrist and review one of your watches. We want to know what you think about a watch that you've owned or that you have in your collection at the moment. And like and subscribe to the podcast as well. For the guys on here and for everyone else, stay on time.